welcome to The Dinner Agenda. This is Bo.
And this is CeeLo.
How's it going? So how you doing, CeeLo?
I'm good. You know, good. It's like busy weekend time with kid activities and stuff, but but pretty good. I'm good. I'm not liking the cold. I don't like the cold weather.
No, it's we've definitely been having a cold snap here for sure.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And my dog doesn't like all the salt that's out. But other than that, things in the household are generally good.
Good. Mm-hmm. Good.
So funny thing actually happened this week.
What happened
this week? Okay, so my daughter has really crooked pinky fingers. Like,
why?
I don't know.
Did she break them?
No, she's never broken them. She was born this way. And in fact, when she was an infant and she was, you know, like the first 3 days you go to the doctor, at 1 week you go to you're back and forth, right? And I noticed these pinkies and I said to the doctor, so the doctor was turned around writing shit down and I'm like, oh, and one more thing, I wanted you to take a look at her hands because her pinkies are really crooked. And the doctor still turned away writing and she says, yeah, that sometimes happens. They usually straighten out as she grows. And she's saying this to me as she turns around and sees her fingers. And she's like, oh. So then I'm like, yeah, see, like, I wasn't just saying, like, a little bit crooked. They were quite crooked.
Like, they're crooked. Oh, my gosh. I don't think I've ever noticed this, but okay.
I'll get her to show you next time. Anyways.
So yeah, yeah.
Life goes on. Now she's obviously 16 years old. But
teenager.
I would say pre-COVID, she was doing competitive swimming and they had really started to bother her. Like they were painful when she was using them and they were achy and painful. So I thought, well, time to go back to the doctor and say, because they really haven't changed. They're still the same level of crookedness. And so they didn't straighten out as she grew. And the doctor referred me to the orthopedic lady who like works next door. And the orthopedic lady is like, I don't know what that is. I think she wasn't very helpful. Shocking, I know. And referred us to like a pediatric sports medicine person. It took forever to get in there.
Like, I'm sorry, wait. Yeah. An x-ray doesn't show that maybe there's just something wrong with the bone or maybe an ultrasound?
We did x-rays, but there wasn't any like diagnosis per se. It was just off to the next doctor, right? So we went to this pediatric sports therapy doctor. And they looked at it and they gave it a name, which right now I can't really remember, but it sounded like pterodactyl.
What?
It sounded like pterodactyl, but I can't remember what it's called.
I'll look it up.
Okay. Anyways, and they had said to me, they can do like a surgery to straighten it out. But she likely wouldn't have the same level of use of her hand, like her grip and stuff. And now at this point, she was done swimming. She's playing basketball and she didn't want to risk it. Right. Yeah, she was like, I'll just, you know, push through or whatever. And they said, what we'd like to do is refer you to SickKids and have them take a look at it. Awesome. Thank you so much. So like months goes by. No referral. Then COVID hit. No referral. Mm-hmm. I had followed up a bunch of times. Now they're not really bugging her anymore. So I wasn't really that aggressive. And COVID was happening. So, I mean, the hospitals had their hands full and I didn't want to go into a hospital at that time. Yeah. Guess who called me this week?
No.
February 5th, we have an appointment.
Really? Yeah.
And this is from... Wow. At least 3 years ago that we went to that sports medicine clinic.
Really shitty.
Well,
I'm sorry, but that is really shitty.
I agree. It's kind of shitty, but, you know, I'm a bright side kind of gal, right? So on the bright side, it's like, oh, my God, they didn't lose her. They still had her.
Yeah.
And now they finally are actually following up. So I thought that was kind
it's just. Yeah, it is kind of funny. I know that. So, you know, people think that when you live in Canada and you get free healthcare, how perfect the world is, you know, and it's like they have no idea. I mean, to see a specialist to be waiting for 3 years, you know, to get tests, sometimes you're waiting a year, you know, and it's not, it's not the best sometimes. So that's really too bad. And, you know, I'm really curious to see what the heck they referred this to be when you said pterodactyl. And I'm sorry, I didn't mean to laugh, but I
know.
I'm like, where the fuck did you sleep with to have this girl? And how appropriate is that conversation for our actual topic today?
Like the donor sib community and see, actually. Okay, so I looked it up and I wrote it down at the time because I thought I'm always going to remember this as pterodactyl, but it's called clinodactyly. Like clino, like clinic, dactyly, like pterodactyly.
Yeah. Okay, got it.
Yeah, good times.
Got it. Understand your confusion. Yeah,
so I'll keep you posted.
Yeah, please do. Please do. Good.
Yeah, too funny. Yeah, on that note.
Yeah.
What's on the agenda today, Bob?
It's fertility. We're talking about fertility. So I just thought that's why I was laughing because, you know, that is our topic today. And you started talking about this pterodactyl thing that, you know.
Yeah.
And so I just thought, well, geez, that how appropriate to talk about how your daughter was conceived.
Yeah, absolutely. She was she's an immaculate conception.
Yes, that is exactly it for sure. Absolutely. Okay, that's a topic for another podcast. Was Mary really a virgin?
No, exactly.
Okay. So you and I have both had, we've both gone through fertility treatments.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Both of us have done them for different reasons, per se, right? So like mine was, I was having trouble carrying a pregnancy through. So we ended up going to a fertility clinic to help us have a child. Okay. And your situation was you are married to another woman, so it's virtually impossible for you to get pregnant.
Honestly, we tried, but it didn't work.
I'm sure you did. Yeah. I'm sure you gave it the old college try.
CeeLo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I thought it would be interesting to talk about both of our situations. And I think, you know, okay, so you said your daughter's 16. So for you, and she was your first child. So for you, that was 16 years ago.
Yep.
When I did this, it was 13 years ago. And there wasn't a lot of coverage for this type of treatment. So most of it was out of pocket. So it was quite expensive. And I think some of that has changed a little bit in Ontario, Canada now. They start to cover some things, but not all.
Yeah.
But, you know, at the time it was, you know, all out of pocket, which I think is the case for most people. Around the world when they have to do these things also.
Oh, 100%. And I think, I mean, what the province covers versus what your like work healthcare or whatever healthcare you're paying into, your extra coverage would cover as well. At the time that we did it, I don't remember much being covered at all. We had burnt through whatever little bit was covered very, very quickly in the first kind of go around. So.
Yeah,
it was kind of like it didn't even make much of a difference for us.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So tell me about your experience. So I know that so you and your wife got legally married and you had talked about having children prior to you getting married. I know that stuff.
Yeah.
But what gave when did you know you were ready? What was this all about? Tell me.
I think there was never any question in my mind about having kids. It was always something that I knew that I wanted. I knew I wanted to carry. And I think for wifey, it was maybe a little bit more up in the air for her. And I think part of that was wrapped around how her family might think and feel about it and how it might be perceived and what people would think and do. Like, keep in mind, I mean, we got married in 2005, so things are a lot different now, thank goodness.
Yeah, they are.
And there's a lot more acceptance out there, which is awesome. But yeah, we got married and at that point we both knew we wanted to try and have kids. And so a few years after we got married, we booked an appointment with our family doctor who referred us to a fertility clinic.
Okay.
And we went in and met with the fertility clinic just as like an info gathering thing. And they gave us a ton of information. They actually did like a social work review where we had to meet with a social worker before we started the fertility process. I don't know, like to check.
Why?
check to make sure that we were both on the same page around things, I guess.
So, okay. So that's interesting because, okay, so 16 versus 14 years ago, 2 years difference, not that long of a period of time, right? Between when you did it and I did right. it. When my husband and I went to the fertility clinic, so we got referred as well. They did, like, the initial doctor, you know, was asking, you know, so what do you both want? And, you know, has this been something that you've always wanted? And what happens if you can't have children? You know, are you looking to explore adoption? So they asked us those kinds of questions and then it was done. But you're saying you had to go to a workshop?
No, it wasn't a workshop. It was like or a social worker that met with us separate from the doctor.
See? No, I'm wondering if that's because you were a gay couple. Do you think so?
Maybe. I didn't get the impression that it was like, oh, here come the lesbos. Better make sure they go see a social worker first. I got the impression more so yeah. that it was related to how hard going through fertility treatments can be on a couple. And
okay.
And so I think it was just something that that clinic did. I don't think it was like a singled out kind of lesbo thing, but either way, I think it was good because it had us talking about it and they asked us some really good questions and
yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's interesting. I we were never referred to a social worker.
And clearly you should have been. Mm-hmm. You should have been. No, I'm joking. Yeah, so that was like one step. And then I think they gave us some information on where to get sperm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they had a Canadian donor place and all six people registered there.
All six people.
It was like it was slim pickings.
Yeah. You know, though, now that you've just said that, I'm wondering if it's because you were going to be using a donor sperm. And so the situation was different because Dave and I were using our own eggs and sperm, right? Maybe that's the difference. I don't know.
I don't think.
Sorry, I don't mean to keep harping on it. I'm just surprised that I never got this social worker visit.
I think it would pissed. Be like a sperm situation.
I don't know. But yeah. Okay. Back to there were only six.
I was joking.
People
I'm making yeah. jokes. It was very slim pickings. And yeah. at the time, and it may be different now, I'm not sure, but in Canada, I think sperm donors were given like a bus ticket and a cheese sandwich, whereas in the US, you get paid for that. You get paid for yeah. that donation.
And that's
so
right.
there was a lot more to choose from. We looked online, I think, at two different sperm banks, and one had, you know, a really easy to use website, good information. And so we chose that one. It was called Zytex, was mm-hmm. the company we went with. And then we started looking for our ideal guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah. that was a tough process to go through for sure.
How did you navigate that? Like, yeah. how do you,
we had wine.
Like, did you have criteria or how do you pick somebody?
Yeah.
There were thousands, you said, yeah, right? Yeah. Like thousands yeah. of options. Yeah. How do you pick somebody? Were you looking for specific hair color, eye color? Like,
well, in my knowing that I was going to carry, I was looking for someone that met Mel's physical characteristics.
Uh-huh.
Right.
Okay.
And
okay.
so yeah. I think that was kind of initially what we were kind of going for, mm-hmm. what we'd agreed to. But mm-hmm. I said wine earlier, like, a no joke, we would sit at the computer, crack a bottle of wine, and read through profiles.
Wow.
Yeah. And then we got to the point where it was like, okay, cool. We've got some possibilities here that we had both agreed on. So then you pay like a membership fee and then you can get a more detailed profile of each of your top people, mm-hmm. top spermers.
Do they tell you how many donations they've made or something?
I don't remember how many they report on successful pregnancies.
Okay. So like what I'm asking is, are you able to tell whether or not that one particular donor has like potentially fathered hundreds or thousands of kids? Like, are you able to know that? Or is it just,
I don't remember it saying that specifically. I remember mm-hmm. it saying number of successful pregnancies, or it was like successful pregnancies, yes or no. And it was yes on him. So,
okay.
Yeah. But yeah, we basically just narrowed it down. We had the same top three. My number one was her number two. Her number two was my number one or something. And so it was once mm-hmm. we got it narrowed down, we were pretty good at just going for it and making a decision. And then once we had that, we connected back in with the clinic and they started, you know, the daily monitoring. So they were monitoring my cycle, which was a massive pain in the ass because it was like 7:30 I was there, blood work, ultrasound, meet with the doctor. And they're like, okay, come back in 4 days. And they're like, okay, come back in 3 days. And it was like, come back tomorrow, come back tomorrow, come back. Yeah. Okay, we're ready. And so it's kind of funny.
Yeah.
But the vial of sperm, this was like, what, 17 years ago now almost, I guess, 16, 17 years ago, was like one vial was $1,000. That was not covered.
Oh, geez.
And each cycle, we used two vials because they would do an IUI on the day where your
egg. What's an IUI?
Intrauterine insemination.
Insemination. Yeah. Okay. So, okay.
So it
okay,
would go yeah, right yeah. up past the cervix.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
With
okay.
like a little catheter. And so that wasn't covered. So that was like a big chunk of the money for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And they would ship it. And they wouldn't defrost it until we were both there and I had had my ultrasound and then it took a while to defrost and then off you go. So I think the first month we didn't use any drugs. They just basically defrosted those little swimmers. And then
like when you say no drugs, you mean like the fertility
drugs? No fertility drugs at all.
Nothing. No. So it was just your natural cycle.
Natural cycle.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Unsuccessful. Keeping in mind that I was like...
Yeah, how old?
37.
Uh-huh. Okay.
I guess. 36, 37.
Yeah.
37?
Yeah. I think you were 36 because I was 38 when I started. So we did the, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, they had said to me when they did like the full.
We just gave away our ages. You realize that now, right?
No. I'm.
Damn it.
I'm 39
Well, because of what
now.
I was saying. That's right. Yes. Go ahead. It's all right. Who cares? We are who we are. Go on.
Well, it's good. We're embracing our wise years of experience. And stuff.
Yeah.
So when they did like a full write-up, like a full workup on me or whatever, they were like, yeah, you're kind of got some old eggs. it wasn't amazing results, but it was okay. Mm-hmm. So the first cycle they did, we did no drugs. And then that was unsuccessful. So then the next month they did some Puregon, which was to help me make more eggs in a typical cycle. Yeah. And then they also did a shot which held off ovulation.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember what it was called though, but they would hold off ovulation so that it would allow the egg to get as big as possible. And then they would give me a shot to make me ovulate. And then off we went, right? So we did that the second month and not successful. And then the third month we tried, they upped the Puregon. So even more to try and get more eggs. And then third shot was successful. So we found out, I don't know, a few weeks later that that it had worked and that I was preggers. And... yeah, so that was awesome. That was pretty straightforward and easy. Like it was, it's kind of all consuming. Like I can remember writing down, I had like a little book where I was writing down what my blood work was saying, you know, in the trying to get pregnant. And then once you were pregnant, it was like, these numbers need to double and this should look like this. And, you know, you kind of get paranoid. But I think we were lucky to get it on the third shot, given, you know, I wasn't exactly a spring chicken.
And the fact that you were able to use your own eggs as well, you know, because that's one of the things that I learned when I started going to the fertility clinic, how quickly your eggs start to degrade or age or whatever you want to call it.
I say they get old and crusty.
Old and crusty eggs. That sounds just so lovely. But like, it's amazing how quickly that happens. It's like, I think they were telling me that the true ideal age for pregnancy and for like the healthiest outcomes is in your 20s. And it's like, well, who the fuck is, I mean, this thing, the majority of people are not having kids in their 20s, right? I would say the majority of people are having them in their 30s, right?
Yeah.
So, I'm wrong on that, but I just...
That's probably why, like, I think people waiting a little longer to have kids is why more and more people are seeking out help, like fertility clinics and different different options there, freezing eggs, doing all that. And it's kind of like, I can remember feeling, because there's a 5-year age difference between wifey and I. So I can remember feeling like, hey, like I can almost physically feel my egg shriveling up inside of me. We need to get this like show on the road here. And wifey's like, you're not that old. It's okay. And I'm like, no. I feel like we need to get it going or else we're going to, you know, just have more and more struggle with it. But
Yeah.
And then, the second, so we waited 2 years.
Yeah. And the second one was a little different, right? Because
the second one was a little different.
Tell me.
Oh, I'll tell you. I feel saucy. Yeah. We started off with the same level of fertility drugs, right? With the Puregon or whatever. Mm-hmm. They were like, let's keep it going from where we. Mm-hmm. And so we did that, and they escalated that drug and holding off my ovulation and, you know, everything they could. And we did for 3 months and no success. Mm-hmm. And so we said, okay, let's take a break, because it was just 3 months, but it is very stressful.
It's exhausting.
All consuming. Yeah, you're at the clinic all the time. I was like, I had a job where I, you know, was working, and it wasn't, I didn't have all the flexibility in the world. So I was trying to get there at like the first thing in the morning. And so it was long, you know, and at this point now I've got a little one at home. Right. So we took a little break, and then we went back in and met with the doctor, and she's like, well, the options really are, we really blast you with some more fertility drugs and, you know, shoot for the stars kind of thing, or we could use Mel's eggs because
she's younger.
They're younger.
Yeah.
She doesn't have old and decrepit. What did I say? Old and crusty.
Old and crusty.
Old and crusty eggs.
How was Mel with that, though? Was she okay with that?
I think she was
taken aback.
I think she was like crazy excited.
She jumped on
the opportunity, because basically now she's like even more engaged in the whole process of baby making. Mm-hmm. And she doesn't need to actually carry the baby or give up alcohol and soft cheese for 9 months or breastfeed, or, you know what I mean?
I know.
So she's like, this is like, you know, paying someone to do the dirty work. So it was good. And you know what? When the first one came out, our daughter came out, she looks a lot like me. And so Mel was excited.
Listen, she is the spitting image of you when you were younger. I mean, it's amazing when I see her. It is you. Yeah. It's like, it brings me right back to when we were kids. But yes.
I know, right?
Okay. Yeah.
And so I think Mel was also excited to
see
what would happen and have some offspring with some physical features that look like her as well. So
That's
we used the same donor. We did the 3 months, nothing. Then we used Mel's eggs. So they gave Mel drugs to make a whole shit ton of eggs. Mm-hmm. And they gave me drugs to hold off ovulation or hold off me making any eggs.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And so once Mel had a whole bunch of...
Was that to build the lining up, I guess, maybe?
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
And then once Mel had a whole bunch of eggs ripe and ready, they took them out of her. And given my age, they were willing to put 3 fertilized eggs back in me. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I was like, fuck no. I have to draw the line at 2, just in case. I have to.
Could you imagine if they all took? I know. Yeah.
So that was a bit of a process for sure. So they put 2 fertilized. They had, I think she had 8 good ones and 7 survived the night. And you know, four looked really strong after they had used the sperm to inseminate them. What is that mm-hmm. called? I can't even remember what the name of that is called, where they do that.
Artificial insemination or in vitro?
No. Yeah. No.
In vitro fertilization?
No. It.
Well, yeah.
Oh my God. Why can't I? They take the egg and they take the sperm in a dish and they put the sperm in the egg in the dish. And then they wait and then they put it in me.
Yeah. So I thought that was in vitro fertilization. I thought that that was the process. Maybe that's not the name, but I think that's the process. Because there's different options, right? Yeah. There's like, you know, sperm donation. There's egg donation. There is, you know, artificial insemination. There is like with your own eggs and your partner's sperm, if you have a male partner, or, you know, it, like there's just so many different options available. So I guess, who knows? But okay. Yeah. So they actually took Mel's egg out and then fertilized it with the same sperm donor.
In the dish.
And you had two eggs put in you.
And then I had two eggs put in me.
And did it take that time?
That first time it took. Okay. And I was pregnant. And that's how we had our son.
Yeah. Yeah. That's amazing. And so they both have the same biological father or I guess donor. Sorry, that's donor. Yeah.
They have two loving parents.
I won't call him a father.
Yeah. There's no father here. There's two loving parents and donor. Yeah. And So that's how that all worked. When you went in, how many, like you did IUI with hubby's sperm?
Yeah. Yeah. But first we did before we got to that part, we did fertility treatments like medication. Because what happened was I had an IUD in and I got the IUD out when my husband and I decided that we wanted to try for children. Yeah. And that very next month I got pregnant, which what I understand now is actually not that uncommon when you either stop birth control, medication in some way, shape or form. Sometimes it surges eggs, you know, to like more eggs to form. Yeah, yeah. And so people getting pregnant after they stop the birth control is not as uncommon. But yeah, I ended up getting pregnant the very, very next month. So we were surprised about that. And just as I was approaching the third month, I ended up miscarrying. And so that was a real shame and that was a real upsetting
heartbreak
time. Yeah. Yeah, it really was because, you know, at that point, you know, you're really like, you're just so excited and, you know, you're feeling all the symptoms of being pregnant and you know that they're
too, right? Like
totally. Yeah. And it was just, it was just really sad. But then, so, you know, I miscarried that one and then, we tried again and, you know, it wasn't really happening. So we went to the fertility clinic at that point. And, because of my age, I think my doctor was like, let's not wait, right? Like, let's get you in. Yeah. Because typically what they say is you're considered to have a fertility issue or problem if you've actually been trying for a year, right? And with no results. But if you are older, they may not make you wait the year and they may just kind of push you through. And that's what happened with us.
Okay.
So yeah, so we went in and, they started with the medication. So we tried the medication route first where they would, I would create, like they were giving me the medication to create more eggs. They were, monitoring my cycle. So, you know, it was kind of similar to your experience as well, where you'd have to go in, you get these blood tests. I was actually having to do the internal ultrasounds, quite frequently. Remember those with the magic wand there? Yeah. The large dildo on a stick that you're getting stuck with.
They actually put the condom on. It's like,
they do.
Okay, awesome.
They actually do. And so
a glass of wine first, please. Yeah.
Well, actually, let me deviate for a sec. How was that for you? Because
it was fine. Sorry, I wasn't
I'm
too.
I'm kidding.
It didn't I think lying there half naked at the time, you're like, oh my God, this is so awkward. And then fast forward to 9 months later, and you've got basically a crowd of people all watching you push a child out of your vag. So
it just
eases you in. It eases you in to what is to come. That's all.
Yeah. Very good. Yeah. Okay. So then we did the medication and we were getting monitored. And so they would say, okay, like we'd actually have the doctor call to say, okay, you need to have sex tonight and you need to have sex tomorrow. You know what I mean? Like it was that kind of thing.
Is that
so,
like really
so,
stressful though? Like on yes. man, sexy time?
You know what? For me, okay. So for me, when we decided that we wanted to try to have children, we were just like, just doing it normally, naturally, yeah. whatever, no intervention. It was really exciting for me. And I think a little bit for him too, because it was like, can we do it? And are we going to be able to, yeah. you know, conceive? And it was just so exciting. And for some reason, it just made the sex like super during that time frame.
Yeah.
When it started with the, okay, you guys need to do it today and tomorrow. And, yeah. you know, it did lose a lot of the...
It's like a prescription.
The excitement of it was a little bit down at that point and it was just not the same. And it's just, you know, yeah, it's just not the same. I mean, because you're performing at this point. It's not, you know, I mean, it was still enjoyable, don't get me wrong, but it was not the same.
You start to feel fresh.
Yeah, you do. You really kind of do. But, you know, we were very open and I think we were... trying as best as we could to be prepared for that mechanical part of this whole process.
Right.
I don't know if you really can be, you know, but that was, you know, we did that for quite some time and I would get pregnant, but I always ended up miscarrying.
So how many miscarriages did mm-hmm. you have altogether?
I had 3 recorded and I suspect I had 2 more.
Wow.
That I did not have recorded. Yeah. Yeah.
That must have been so frustrating and so sad and so angry. Like, I just feel like every mm-hmm. emotion must have been wrapped up in that.
Mm-hmm. When that yeah, pretty much. Right. Because it's, and then at that point it's like you're, you know, going through like a medical process at this point and it's taking all of the romance out of it. It's taking all of the, you know, spontaneity out of, you know, like, cause it's like, you know, they were like, you know, maybe don't, you know, ejaculate 2 days before, you know, like just, it was like all these kinds of things. So it's like everything was regimented and you had to just kind of follow a program and it just took away a lot from our intimate relationship that we had. And then having the losses of the babies was really, really hard to.
Yeah.
And then I felt like a failure because, you know, you said that you and Mel are 5 years apart. Well, you know, Dave and I are 5 years apart as well. I'm actually 5 years older than him. And so there was an element of me feeling like such a big failure because I'm like, you know, if I had been younger, if you had been with somebody younger, this would not have been occurring.
Yeah.
You know, I have to say I was very lucky. He's always been and continues to be a super supportive partner. And, you know, his whole thing was I did not marry you to have children. Yeah. I married you for you. This was just icing on the cake for
added
me.
Bonus,
right?
But, added bonus, for sure.
Yeah. So that helped a lot for sure. But yeah, it was devastating. And then because I kept miscarrying at that point, they said the same thing that they had said to you, which was, look it. At this point, you're now, you know, 39, heading into your 40s. And, you know, your egg quality is like, it's dropping like every 6 months, the quality of the egg was just dropping. And it's amazing how fast that quality drops as you get older. And they basically
like rolling
said
downhill, like it starts at the top and it's slow, but then as it gathers speed. Yeah. 100%.
It's very, very true. That is such a great analogy because
like
it's true.
You have that added pressure. So not only are you trying to like eat right and do things and have all the sex or go to the doctor for the sperm, you know, like whichever boat you're in. On top of all of that, there's like this friggin' clock ticking away behind you, adding so much pressure.
Yeah, because you're getting older and you know what? Time is of the essence,
and
right?
Your stress doesn't help when you're trying to do it. It was stressful when we tried for the first, definitely more stressful for the second because that clock had sped up because we just tried 3. I don't need a $200,000 family. You know what I mean? Like it was costing us quite a bit of money at that point. And so that, that was, it just, it was, felt like a lot of pressure, which is like the opposite of what you need when you're trying to
act. 100%.
Yeah.
Yeah, you got it. And you know, those drugs that they give you are not cheap. No. I mean, they are very, very expensive. Never mind the actual treatments themselves, right? But you know, like the actual procedures that you have to go through, which you have to pay for, but the drugs themselves, I remember like 2000, 3000, you know, it was just adding up. Right. Yeah. So that was really, kind of, you know, more on the shitty side of the experience. And when they had said to us, look at you, you may want to consider an egg donor. That's when we were like, oh, okay, so we've got to figure this out. So at that point they did suggest the insemination, the same one that you had where they put the catheter up through the cervix. So it's getting like, you know, it's not making the sperm work at all. It's putting it right where it needs to be, right where the egg is. So we did that as well and tried to do that before we actually decided on the egg donation. And I did get pregnant and again lost that baby. And it was just like, okay, so it's, you know what, my eggs are just not working anymore. It's just not going to happen. Yeah. So, at that point, we had some decisions to make, and it was either going to be, do we go through the donation, the egg donation, or do we go through adoption? So we began kind of looking at all of those avenues, and we were starting to research, you know, what options there were available. And, you know, like you, we would have to go to the US to get the donor eggs.
How much was that? Yeah, I was going to say how much.
Yeah, it was about $30,000. And that's because of the legal fees. So what ends up happening is, so within, in Canada, from what I've heard, similar to you, donations, whether they be eggs or sperm, they have to be made as a pure donation. So you cannot provide any kind of monetary, you know, reward or like not be able to buy them, like nothing. But in the United States, you know, it's more like a donation, if you will. It's not an actual, you must buy my egg, but it is a donation for the effort that person has gone through and the cost of the drugs associated to that person producing multiple eggs for you, and you know what I mean, kind of, you know, that kind of stuff. So you're kind of covering those costs and some of the time you're having to pay for the time that person has, and then of course it's a lot of that money is on legal documentation, right? Because this is somebody else's egg that you're going to be fertilizing.
It's kind of weird though. Carrying. Like I get that there's more costs associated with egg production and retrieval, but then I would think the storage is the same, right? It gets frozen and then it gets shipped in the cryo, whatever. And so I would expect that to be the same. And then why is it so much different than sperm donation?
I think because there is controversy around who is considered the birth mother or who is considered the mother of the child. There's concern, and which is why the legal documentation on that side is really intensive and it's a lot more expensive.
But if you think about it, why? I'm not thinking it all through, but I'm thinking, why is it any different whether it's the swimmer or the egg?
Well, and that's a very good point. I'm not really sure. That's something that we should probably research. I think that would be helpful to know or even just understand. But what I can tell you is that from what I remember, it is there is a higher chance of legal issues with an egg donation versus the sperm donation, because the egg is what is, I guess, turning into the baby. I have no idea, but it was that way. And
it takes both. That's my
it does. Okay,
I'm going to add this to our follow up. For
yeah,
sure,
let's do that.
Like, what was it like then, and what is it like now, and why is it different?
I seem to remember there were some legal cases where some people did end up suing for rights to a child because it was their egg that was donated, and they had biological rights, you know. And I think that that's what ends up like happening, I guess, is that you've got to try to safeguard yourself legally around those kinds of scenarios. Because you know what? Humans are humans. And sometimes you might go into this thinking, oh, I'm okay to donate my egg. And then as you get older, you might be thinking, oh, geez, you know what I mean? I might not be that comfortable with somebody else giving birth to a part of me, you know?
Yeah. Who knows?
Mm-hmm. So that was about 30,000. And so we were thinking, you know, do we want to go that route? You know, Dave was, he was kind of on the fence. He's like, you know, I'm kind of okay. But he said, you know, my real goal was, you know, to have a child with you. Like that was my icing on the cake. If we could have a child together, that's what I was really looking forward to. You know, I don't need to go the donation route. But then on the flip side, we also talked about adoption at that time as well, because we wanted to see what options we all had, right? So there was the egg donation. We looked at adoption, and the adoption was interesting. Like, did you guys ever talk about adoption, by the way? Like, did you ever say if you could not get pregnant with the sperm donor?
Yeah, for sure. Would you? I think we talked about it as one of the things on the table, one of the options for sure, and what that might look like. So I think we both agreed that that would be an avenue we would pursue should our first, you know, try not work out. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So you guys were both on board to go down the adoption route if you had to.
If we needed to, yeah, for sure.
Okay. All right. Interesting. Yeah. Okay. That's good. That's good to know. So when we started looking into it, so there's a few types of adoption available within Canada, right? Like that provide you access to adopting children. One of them is the public adoption, right? And that's where like you're really kind of waiting for the Children's Aid Society to find a match for you, right? And the public adoption, I mean, it's a great option because there are so many children that are given up. And they really definitely need permanent homes and committed parents. And, you know, so it's a wonderful option. The problem with that is it takes a very, very long time. And you typically don't get very young children or infants, you know, it's usually older children. And for Dave and I mean, we were already now, you know, in my late 30s, early 40s at this point. And they were very clear. The Children's Aid Society was very clear that, you know, although anybody can adopt, they would prefer
younger
that you are 40 or under, right? Because, you know, they're looking for the well-being for of the child as well.
Well,
right?
And also I imagine like depending on what you're looking for, how long it might take for that match to happen. Like it could, you know, maybe you were 39 when it all started, but by the, you know, you're older by the time something is successful.
Yeah. You could be 45 by the time you get matched with a child.
Into private, like doing a private type adoption at all? Okay. How much was that money? How much money?
Yeah, it is. So the public one was free, obviously. Yeah. And they're not saying that they will not provide you with a child, but you know what? You could be waiting forever. And then by the time you hit a certain age, it's like, come on, they're not going to do it. Right. So there's that, but the private one. Yeah. I looked into that. So they say the range for that is about 15,000 to 30,000, but anything that I was looking at was in the $30,000 range. I couldn't find anything for 15,000. It was all 30,000. Yeah. And that's using like a private adoption agency. And what they kind of explain with that is, you know, the person who is giving up their child, they have the option of choosing who the adoptive parents will be. And, you know, it's a great process. Again, our age was what was kind of hindering us because most people want a younger couple for their children. And so it was like, shit, everywhere we turned, it was really kind of, you know, difficult, which is fine. I mean, these things are difficult and it's, I guess, testing you to make sure that this is what you want, right?
Yeah.
But it was a little discouraging for us because we kind of could see the writing on the wall, which was, you know, our age was kind of hindering us at this point. Yeah. And then there's always the international adoption. And that was probably the,
even more money.
From what we, it's even more money. It's about 60,000 to do it. But you know what? Your chances are a heck of a lot better. They have less criteria. You can be an older person. You can be single. You know what I mean? And you typically can get these children And in around the $60,000 range and faster as well. Yeah. So we looked at that also to see whether or not we would want to do that. As we were kind of going through all of this, we were looking at the, you know, egg donation. We were looking at the adoption.
All the options, yeah.
Mm-hmm. We were also talking about the amount of money that we've already spent on everything. Yeah. And then we were talking about our age also. And at the time when both of us did this, there, you know, like I think I'd mentioned earlier on, it was all out of pocket. I think now our government, you know, covers some costs, but at that time, you're taking your savings out, right? And
oh God,
yeah. You know, you're spending a lot of money on this. It is definitely not a cheap process. And so we were trying to weigh the pros and cons of everything. We were trying to look at this as responsibly as we could. You know, where were we financially? How much more was this going to be? And, you know, what were we mentally prepared for? And at that point, I think we both made the decision partly for our age, the challenges we were experiencing, the money that we had already spent. But then there was a huge part that was like, mentally, do we want to keep going? Because we were so devastated by so much of this process, you know, the miscarriages and then, you know, the intimacy and the stress that it was causing on us and our relationship. And it was like, do we want to just keep going or do we want to just accept that this is our life and that we each are each other's family and, you know, children may not be part
of it. And your godchildren, don't forget your godchildren.
My lovely godchildren who I love, who are your children, but they're really my babies.
If they don't bring their laundry down and clean their room, though, they'll also be up for adoption later today. So
they are well.
Two teenagers looking for a good home, Auntie.
You know what? Gladly. And I have spare rooms. They are welcome. Absolutely. 100%.
I was thinking about it as you were going through some of the costs, though, of adoption. And when you look at that, like 20K to 60K. For international. Yeah. And I'm like, I need to go back and ask wifey what, because she will have kept track of some of this stuff better than me.
Yeah.
But
how much you spent?
Yeah.
Right?
I'm like, we spent 12 to 15 just on the jizz.
I know. Just, and this is the thing. Okay.
Never
so this
mind
is the thing.
It's like drugs, procedures, drugs for her drug, like all of like, so I'm kind of like, I kind of want to go back and add that all up to get a, you know, refresher on what it.
Well, and that's what I meant about the finances. It's like you spend already 60 grand on this. You've taken 60,000 in your savings, which is not an easy amount to save in the first place.
And now another.
You've spent it all. Yeah. And now you'd have to spend another 60,000. Mm-hmm. And then once you have the child, you've got daycare, you've got, you know, education needs to think about and savings for college and university. But like, I mean,
hockey.
All of those things.
Hockey
just,
is very expensive. Don't do hockey.
Yeah. I know your son's really into that. That is very expensive for sure. But you know, it's just, it's a lot, you know, and honestly, we were just getting older by the minute. So it was like, what do we want to do here? Really?
And so it's a personal decision. You have to think about how you feel, how the hubby feels, how, you know, your relationship, your finance, like all those things come into play. And it's such a big decision. I think the easier part of what we went through was it wasn't like somebody came to us with a price tag and said, this is going to cost you 80 grand.
Yeah.
I think we would have fallen off our chairs at that point.
Absolutely.
I probably would have prostituted myself to make money to do it. That's how badly I wanted children.
You know, I know. I remember the conversations we used to have before you were married, before I was married. You had a stronger drive to have children than I did, for sure. Mm-hmm. I wanted them, but not to the same level. You were like, I don't care what it fucking takes. I am having children. Yeah. Like you just had, I remember you knew.
I knew. I mm-hmm. love that's my favorite title that I have is mama. So
And you're very, very good at it. You are a very good mama.
Well, thank you.
You are a really good mama. Yeah.
Yeah.
I love it. I love watching what you do and seeing what you do.
I think 5 minutes ago, I offered to sell my children to you.
Yeah, that's okay.
They don't bring their laundry down. But yes, I'm a very good mother.
That does not count. We will edit that out. No, honestly, though, you are a fantastic mama.
Aww.
You are.
Thanks,
Bo.
Yeah. Thanks for that.
You know, it has been an interesting journey for both of us, I know, and yeah. I don't regret any of it. But, you know, I just wanted to mention there was somebody that I know who, like you, knew that they wanted to have children and they were desperate to have children. And they were going through the same thing that my husband and I were going through. It was age related. The eggs were just not viable.
Yeah.
They actually did surrogate. They went the surrogacy route.
Oh.
And it cost them $100,000 to
do
that.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. But you know what? They are so happy. And I'm so happy for them. I just could not spend that money. I don't have that money to spend. If I had that money to spend, though,
yeah.
I sure as shit would have done
that. It would
that
kind
route.
Of be
I would
a
have gone that route for sure.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, for sure. For sure.
Yeah. It's sad to think that this is people's dream and feel like yeah. it's their lot in life to be a parent and something they've always dreamt about, always wanted, and then to think mm-hmm. that due to the financial cost of it, they're not going to be able yeah. to fulfill something like that, right? Like,
it's kind of heartbreaking
to think about it, especially with so many people waiting a little longer to go down yeah. the make a family path and then realizing, yeah. oh shit, you know, it's a yeah. tough one. It's definitely a tough one.
It is. Do you think you would actually ask your daughter to or suggest to your daughter to freeze her eggs when she was older just in case? So that way there's no rush, no pressure, no.
God, woman, she just got her driver's license.
I'm not saying now. I'm saying like in her early 20s, mid 20s. Would you consider having that conversation with her? I will have that conversation with her. Never mind. I will talk to her when she is in her mid-20s. And I'm going to say, sweetheart, you are going to freeze your eggs.
Let's
done.
Go. Go period. Freeze those eggs, baby. I think yep. that is, I would happily chat with her about that at any time if she wants to yep. chat about it. But I think that yep. that's something that, you know, she's got to make the decision about, right? And it depends on, you know, is she with someone and plans on starting a family earlier rather than later? Is she, you know, traveling the world as a doctor or something, you know, you know, like whatever her career yeah. thing that she wants to choose, or I don't know. I yeah. think there's just so yeah. many things about it, but you know, I wouldn't hesitate to have a conversation like that or like anything with either one of my, my kids. I love, talking with them and learning how their brain is thinking and what they think is important, you know, at each different age of their life. And we'll have the convo when they get a little bit older, I'm sure. But I think more and more people are definitely looking into that as an option because they don't want to have to be, you know, if it works out great timing wise, no probs. But if, you know, if it's later in life,
agreed.
They want to have it. It's like a little safety blanket.
Yeah.
Piggies in a blanket.
Piggies in a blanket.
Like eggies.
Well, that was awesome.
Come on.
I love piggies in a blanket.
Okay, cool.
All right. It was great. This was a great conversation. I'm glad that you were open to sharing.
Yeah.
Okay. So until next time, this is
Bo. Until next time. And this is CeeLo. Thanks for taking a seat at the table today. We love our dinner guests.
Don't forget to subscribe and follow The Dinner Agenda on the podcast platform you use so that you don't miss any new episodes. You can also follow us on Instagram and Facebook at The Dinner Agenda.
We look forward to hearing your comments, questions, and even ideas you may have on future episodes.
Thanks for taking this journey with us.